Picture this. You put solar panels on your roof and then sell the power to your next door neighbor. Just ahead, why an unlikely group of activists say that should be your right in Florida. And good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, we're going to take your calls on this new push for greater access to solar power in the Sunshine State. You can get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, he is an advisor on the PBS hit Antiques Roadshow. Don't miss it as we speak with the historian from the famed Stickley Furniture as he visits Jacksonville. Plus, a closer look at Scale Up North Florida, helping small businesses in our area take a big leap forward. All of that ahead. But first this morning, imagine this, the Christian Coalition and the Tea Party joining hands and singing Kumbaya with liberals and environmentalists. And add to that Motley Crue, libertarians, and Florida's Retail Business Federation. This assortment of strange bedfellows actually came together last week for a news conference in Tallahassee as they announced a big campaign to ramp up solar power in Florida. Floridians for Solar Choice has put together a petition drive, and they're trying to get an amendment on the ballot next year that would allow people in the state who generate their own solar power to sell it directly to other consumers. But of course, the state's utilities are expected to give this unlikely coalition a tough fight. This morning, we're beginning the hour with an in-depth discussion around the push for solar power in the Sunshine State as we welcome by phone Dr. Stephen Smith. He's Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Steve Smith, thanks for calling into the show.
Well, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to speak with you and your listeners.
And here's our question to callers right now. What do you think about Floridians for Solar Choice? We want to know right now, would you vote yes or no on an amendment that would allow you to sell solar power directly to your neighbors, to other businesses? You would bypass the utilities to do this. Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. We also want your comments on our Facebook page. So, Stephen Smith, as I mentioned, this is an unlikely coalition of strange bedfellows around the state, groups that don't normally see eye to eye, but they do on this issue of solar power. Can you tell us how liberals and conservatives, Tea Party groups, libertarians, business groups, how did everyone come together around this issue? How did it all get put together?
Well, it actually makes sense when you think about it. On the right side of the political spectrum, you have libertarians and Tea Party activists and other members of the Christian Coalition that all believe in free market. They believe that government interference should not limit people's rights to certain things, for choice and other things. They don't like big monopolies. They don't like monopolies dictating choices that people can make. And the Retail Federation, they're a group of large big box stores like the Walmarts and the Publix. They're looking to figure out ways to stabilize their electric costs, their energy costs long term. They see solar power as a vehicle to do that, because once you put the panels up, it locks in your energy costs for the next 20 to 30 years. And obviously, the environmental community and others see solar power as being an important resource that provides clean energy without the environmental impacts. And we also see it as an economic driver to clean jobs and others. So there really is a lot of common ground across all those principles. And because of the way that the utilities have been so heavy-handed in their approach to solar power, limiting it in the state, using their political influence in Tallahassee, influencing the way that the Public Service Commission makes rules and other things, people are just fed up. And so the lucky thing in Florida is that we have an opportunity to take this directly to the people, and that's what Floridians for Solar Choice is all about, giving people in Florida a voice and a choice.
We'll go to your calls about Floridians for Solar Choice in just a moment at 549-2937. Now, Stephen, it's interesting to note that Florida is just one of only a handful of states where citizens are prohibited from buying solar power electricity directly from anything, anyone other than a utility. Now, let me ask you, this ballot initiative that you hope to get before the voters next year, what would the language say? If the voters say yes to this, what would the new measure do? Can you describe specifically what this would mean for the average folks who have solar powers already on their roof of their home or business?
Absolutely. Well, and that is the main purpose. What we are trying to do is remove a barrier that most other states in the country, only five states in the United States, prohibit what is called third parties or businesses to be able to sell directly to electricity to consumers other than a utility. And we're limiting it to just solar power at this point. We're saying that if a business wants to come in, a solar power business, and wants to approach you about putting solar power on your roof of your house, or if you're a business owner on your business. Right now, one of the biggest barriers to that, other than this law that prevents you from interacting with this individual, is that lots of people can't afford the upfront cost, because solar power, its prices are coming down, but there still are costs to get solar on your roof initially. These companies that could now come in and enter the market in Florida and begin to help people finance their solar panels through their utility bills. In other words, they would come to you and say, we can lower your bill. You would pay us a portion of your bill. You would continue to pay your utility a portion. But when you combine the two of them, it would be lower than your current bill. And all the time, you would actually be getting solar power on your roof. And after you pay the panels off, they become yours to basically keep into the future and keep your prices lower, much lower. And so it's really what this is geared to do is get over that upfront cost of solar power so that we can see hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in Florida, take advantage of the God-given sun that we have that make us the sunshine state, and be able to eliminate that barrier that the utilities have put in place saying, you have to do it my way or the highway. We're not going to let you do solar unless you go through us in some way. And this is a way to open up freedom, open up choice, open up the free market, allow competition. But we're only limiting it to solar, and we're only limited to certain amounts of solar. But the residential and the business customers will be fine. The utilities will be fine, too. They just hate to lose any of their market share. They're going to fight this. They're going to come up with all kinds of misinformation about why this won't work. But the reality is, our focus is giving people that choice, bringing some other players into the market that can actually help you lower the cost of becoming a solar customer and stabilizing your energy prices long term, so you're not locked into the whims of whatever a utility may do to you in the future.
Well, let me ask you about that, Stephen. Of course, the state's utilities do swing a pretty heavy bat in Tallahassee. They're expected to give this initiative a very tough fight. And their argument, let's talk about their argument. They're saying that actually, even though we're known as the Sunshine State, that we have a lot of cloudy days, that solar is still expensive, and that if too many people go this model, that this would place a burden on poor utility customers because it would jack up utility rates. It would cost companies like JEA and Florida Power and Light more to maintain their power plants. What about their argument that this, and this is a disruptive business model, of course, that you're championing. What about their argument that if this change were to go through, that it would place an undue burden on lower-income utility customers?
Well, let's take each one of those. First of all, Florida is the Sunshine State. Anybody that's lived in Florida and spent time in Florida, yeah, we get rain, but we also get plenty of sunshine. And the beauty of it is that because of the geographic location of Florida, closer to the equator, it has the best solar potential of any state in the eastern United States based on market potential because of its location and because of its size. Florida is about to become the third largest state in the United States. Tremendous potential. That's just factually inaccurate. Rain does not prevent a solar panel from working because the sun comes up every single day and we get plenty of sunshine in Florida to generate plenty of power. The other thing is that when we look at how solar power will come on by having third-party sales or allowing this ballot to go forward, we're going to lower the cost. And we've seen dramatic drops in the price of solar over the last few years because it's like solar power, the PV panels, photovoltaic panels, are semiconductors. And just like computers, the more you produce, the cheaper they get. So the more people that get into the solar market, the less they each individual unit costs. And we're seeing those dramatic reductions. So if we can open the one of the largest markets in the United States, we're only going to see the price of solar continue to drop. Now, let me focus on this last point, because this is the one that is most insidious that the utilities are using. They're trying to say that somehow or another this is rich people versus poor people. The reality is this. If the utilities plan to incorporate solar into their grid, there will not be an increase in cost. The only time there would be an increase in cost that would be brought back on customers is if the utilities cling to their old business model where they build too many big central station plants and they don't account and plan for the increase in solar activity, and then those plants are no longer needed and they become stranded, and somehow or another they've got to then pass those costs through to customers. If the utilities plan that people on an increasing level over the next coming decade are going to use more and more solar over time, what will happen is they won't have to build those plants and those costs won't have to be borne. But what they're trying to do is say, we want to continue to build the big central station plants and we want to figure out how to stop solar. And if solar takes hold and we built all these big central station plants, then we've got to figure out a way to pay for them. The reality is this is a planning exercise about what we need to do in Florida. It is also an exercise about the utilities providing service to what customers want. They were given a monopoly not to dictate to customers what they need. They were given a monopoly to provide service. And if customers want solar, the utilities need to respond to what customers want.
And lots of calls as we discuss solar power in the Sunshine State. What are your questions for Steve Smith of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy? There's a ballot push for next year's election. Floridians for Solar Choice will ask you if they can get this on the ballot to vote up or down on third-party generated solar power. You'd be able to buy and sell solar power, in effect. Give us a call right now, 549-2937. Chip in St. Augustine. Hi, Chip. Go ahead.
Hey, Melissa. Perfect topic. Fantastic thing. Yes, we are the Sunshine State, and if Germany can produce 40% of their power through solar, and it is all owned by the people there, maybe we can be almost as good as Germany. The other thing is that you need to contact, I'm going to throw another name out here, Adam Morley out of St. Augustine. He has started a business from scratch several years ago to do recycling. In that, he has incorporated solar. He's done his whole house, his whole business. His whole operation is geared to renewable resources. So Adam Morley, go to Facebook and see his page. He's also running for district representative for District 24. He is a fantastic person, brilliant, and got a really good thing going. He's a great resource and a good start.
Thank you, Chip. Thanks for the call. Stephen Smith, go ahead.
Let me respond. One important point the gentleman brought up. Germany in Europe is on the same basic latitude as Maine is. And they're getting, as the gentleman said, significant percentages. Sometimes they've even gotten close to 50% of their power from renewable energy, the vast majority of that from solar. And they have the same sort of climatic conditions that Maine has. Mm. And so for anyone who argues that Florida can't do it, and the utilities try to say, we're not the Sunshine State, we're the partly cloudy state, the reality is there's plenty of sun. It works. Anybody that has solar knows it works. And it's going to be a tremendous resource for Floridians.
Let's go to Denise in Mandarin now. Hi, Denise. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you. I would vote yes. My biggest concern, I think, is trusting the installers. And I love the business model. I think it's a wonderful idea. But it's trusting the installers and making sure that the consumer is protected and they're not fly-by-night kind of guys, you know? That's my concern.
Thanks for that, Denise. What about that? Steve Smith.
It's a very good point, and I think everyone should be cautious. But there are certifying agencies that are basically making sure that installers, if you make sure that the installer that comes to you has the NAPSE certification, this is a national council that basically certifies installers and has a proven track record.
Let me just jump in, Steve. Isn't that how it's done in our neighboring state of Georgia already?
Absolutely, yes. And Georgia's taken off phenomenally. North Carolina has taken off phenomenally. This is not just a California thing. We're seeing other southeastern states leap way ahead of Florida because of strategies to do it. And people aren't getting ripped off in those states.
Let me also ask you, the ballot initiative spokesman is Republican Tory Perfetti of Tampa, head of Conservatives for Energy Freedom. In a GOP-dominated state legislature, how critical is that bipartisan muscle as you try to get this through? Because, as I said, the utility companies, of course, are opposed to this, and they will lobby heavily against it.
Well, I think it's absolutely critical. And not only is this Republicans, this is the Republican base. And the Republican base we saw just this past week where they overturned Rick Scott's choice for the Republican Party. There's a lot of churn going on in the Republican Party in Florida because there's some interests that are only serving moneyed interests. And then there's the base that has real principles and is looking for some things they want to see happen differently. There's tension there. I think any Republican elected official in Tallahassee who doesn't pay attention to the fact that Tea Party, the Libertarians, the Christian Coalition, and the Republican Liberty Caucus have all basically said they want to see this happen. They're going to ignore their base. I think they do it at their own peril.
And lots of comments, meanwhile, on our Facebook page about this. Jenny writes, this makes perfect sense. It decreases our carbon footprint. The sun is a powerful and clean energy source. Kirk, I lived off the grid for many years with solar panels in the Caribbean. I made enough electricity to make drinking water every day, run my ham radio, my computer, and other needs. David points out, as another caller, that Germany is already way ahead of us on this. And James on Facebook, solar and wind will never be able to meet our needs, but they can supplement. I am always up for the rights of people to seek their own solutions to improve their lives. I'm cool with this, and we want your calls. The lines are jammed as we discuss the efforts of Floridians for Solar Choice, a bipartisan effort in the state. Anthony in Ortega. Go ahead, Anthony. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show. My question's a two-part bifurcated compound question. Number one, China has lowered the price of silicon, I believe, to about $60 a kilo, which, as we all know, silicon's a key component of the solar panels. Does the government have any restrictions with using Chinese silicon in our panels? And the second part of my question is, I believe a year or so ago, there was a book called The Rise of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And in that book, it mentions that nuclear is dead and that, of course, Germany comes up again. They are mobilizing their economy and their means of production to make every house, every building have its own solar energy station. And there's a city in Germany now where they've comprised that concept in every household, every business, and they are able to now sell solar energy on the open market. So there's a computer, it kind of registers when the peak times or the low times are, and actually that surplus energy can be sold on the open market and result in a certain to the consumer.
Thanks, Anthony.
That?
Yeah, thank you for that, Anthony, in Ortega just now. Stephen.
Let me respond to the latter part of that first. Every hour of every day, the sun, the amount of sunlight that hits the earth in 1 hour provides enough power to power all the energy humanity needs for a full year. So this is all about being smart about capturing that energy. Every day that when you walk out of your home and it is sunny and you don't have solar panels on your house, there's wasted energy that is just falling that could be used to help society do the work and not have to use fossil fuels, not have to pay money for all these other kind of expensive things that we do. So we need to get smart about doing. So absolutely, the gentleman talked about Germany again, lots of leadership there, but other states. His first point of his question, the United States is having a bit of a battle right now with China about solar panels and some trade war stuff going on. That is something that will be worked out. It's a complicated issue. I don't know if we want to spend a lot of time getting into it right now. But there are panel manufacturers both in the United States and there's a lot in China. The prices continue to come down and there's a lot of shakeout in the market because those price points continue to drop. And again, just like computers, The more you produce, the cheaper they get.
Okay. And calls from across the listening area, meanwhile, on this topic, a very hot topic on the show today. Mitchell in Palatka, thanks for holding, Mitchell. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I've been off the web now for 4 years, and I bought some cheap Chinese solar panels, and I have been on solar now for a long time. But I have, and I, of course, support this initiative, but people need to realize that when a storm comes through, if you're connected to the grid only and you don't have battery storage power like I do, the grid can be knocked out and then your panels won't work.
Thanks for that, Mitchell. Appreciate the call.
That is correct. If you only have your panels interconnected with the grid and you're feeding your excess power back onto the grid and you don't have a storage system, when the grid goes down, the panels will stop working. It is always someone's choice, if they want to have a battery backup. And as we get more electric cars and you hear people like Elon Musk, you know, with Tesla and SpaceX and SolarCity building the Gigafactory, one of the things that the utilities are really concerned about, you think they're concerned about solar, what they're really concerned about is when you couple solar with cheap batteries, and then people can just literally cut the wire coming to their house. Now, that's what scares the daylights out of the utilities. But what's happening is, just like we're seeing disruptive technologies come along like Uber, we've seen digital cameras displace Kodak, we've seen cell phones displace Marbell. This is a technology revolution that's happening. And in the United States, we welcome innovation, we welcome creative thinking, we welcome these types of things. The utilities, the monopoly utilities, they want to hold this back, and so we've got to embrace this. And so, yes, there's a lot of different ways we can do this, and we need to do it smart. We need to work with the utilities, but the utilities don't need to hold back. And the polling we've done, this is extremely popular in the state of Florida, and I think we need to let this happen. Utilities need to get back in the business of being service providers instead of trying to dictate to people what they can and cannot do.
And we want your calls on this topic, meanwhile, as we discuss Floridians for Solar Choice. Richard in Arlington. Go ahead, Richard. Thanks for holding.
Thank you. I guess my question is, in order for this whole thing to work, you have to have the utilities, because the only way that you can transfer through the grid is the existing lines. No one wants any more wires hanging in the air or any more land dug up. So you're using the existing lines just like you did with the telephone company. I can see where their model is disruptive, because people are going to make a profit over what we paid for, the consumers already paid for, out of taxes to build these lines. How is your model going to take that in account, that you have to buy the grid line? You're not going to make your own. You're going to require the utilities to give you access to their grid. Is that correct?
Thanks, Richard. And, you know, as you pointed out, Steve, you're taking on the utilities in this push to get this on the ballot. But is it fair to say that if you are able to get this approved, which will be an uphill climb, you will have to partner with the utilities?
Absolutely. Nobody's talking about doing away with utilities. And where this is different than the gentleman's talking about telephone lines, when you generate power on your roof and you pull it right into your house, you're really not using the line. Now, where you will continue to use the lines is at night, when you need to pull power, if you don't have battery backup, when you need to pull power, and you'll pay for it just like any other customer does. And so we're not talking about blowing up the utilities and doing away with the utilities. We're talking about the utilities carving out a small part of what they do to allow people to self-generate. In the daytime, they'll generate. They won't need the power from the utilities as much, maybe not at all, depending on how efficient their home is. And at night, they'll continue to buy power just like a regular consumer. And when they do that, they're going to pay their share just like everyone else does. So no one's talking about destroying utilities. The only people that are talking about destroying the utilities, to be honest with you, are the utilities themselves, because they don't want to lose market share. The reality is, if they plan for it, and we look forward to working with them, others, this is being done all across the world. Many other states in the United States are doing this. There's absolutely no reason why Florida shouldn't do it too. This is something that the utilities just need to let go and say, people want this, we need to incorporate it, let's be good service providers. We already have a monopoly. You know, we don't have to deal with quote-unquote real competition here. We've limited our initiative to just 2 megawatts, which is more than a single home could use. It's bigger than most businesses can use. And we've limited only solar power, so no one's talking about doing away with utilities. Let's tamp that down. That's not what's happening here. It's about giving those customers who want to go this route and have a little bit more energy independence, a little bit more freedom to do what they want to do, and add and contribute constructively. The utility should welcome this because it's clean power that's being put on the grid by their customers instead of them having to go out and figure out ways to build their own plant.
And here's a little more feedback for you from one of our listeners. It's Rod Sullivan, professor with Florida Coastal School of Law, emailing the show. People need to understand the difference between peak power and baseline power. Solar is a peak power source for use in midday on sunny days. Even if you build solar plants, you still need baseline power from methane, coal, or nuclear. Steve Smith.
That's right. Again, this is a part of the energy mix. No one's talking about everyone going 100% solar tomorrow or anything like this. The utilities will continue to provide baseload power. The gentleman is correct. There is a literally sort of a hump that develops over the course of a day. It's called the load shape that utilities deal with. And solar power works at a certain part of that load shape when the sun is up. And importantly, many times when it's hot and utilities are really working hard to respond to people's air conditioners and this, that, and the other, solar is providing a lot of power there, and it's useful if the utilities plan for it. If the utilities don't plan for it, then they complain about how this messes everything up. And so it's really more of a planning exercise than anything. And by the utility seeing that people want this and they've got time to plan for it, the growth of this will start slow and build over time. I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. We're seeing it happen in many, many other states, and these issues are being dealt with adequately. And in Florida, we get 0.0001% of our power from solar right now. This is not going to change the
energy
mix
overnight. What do you want that percentage to be?
Well, we'd love to see a lot of states are looking at 5, 10, 15, 20, 25% coming from renewables.
Okay.
Let me
jump in and get one more call on the air. It's
sure.
Patricia in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Patricia.
Good morning. I'm for solar power. I don't like amendments to the Constitution. I'd like to see this go through the legislature.
Okay. I think we got cut off there with Patricia, but Steve Smith.
Let's talk about that. Well, if we did a report with Integrity Florida last year showing how the utilities have spent $18 million in Tallahassee influencing things, if we had a fair shake in the legislature, absolutely. We've tried this bill. Others have tried this bill over the past few years. We've tried to work with the Public Service Commission. We've tried to work in Tallahassee, and the utilities shut us down we just can't match them dollar for dollar.
So you're putting this to the voters. You need to get hundreds of thousands of signatures and then get this on the 2016 ballot. That must be approved by 60% of the state's voters. So the petition drive is underway now, correct?
Absolutely. People can go to our website at flsolarchoice.org. More importantly, people can come to our Facebook. It sounds like you have a lot of Facebook followers. We've got a great Facebook page. We're posting stuff up every day. Come like us, share what we're putting up. We're going to use social media. We're going to use electronic media. We're going to use a lot of the tools to really help get the word out. And we need each and every one of your listeners to join us because this is about citizens having choice. It's about giving them a voice. Even if you don't agree with it, at least let's put it on the ballot so people can vote on it. Let's see where it comes down. But I believe, as we've seen in our polling, this is overwhelmingly popular. We need help. I mean, look, this is a David and Goliath. I'm not naive about that. But people in Florida, when they get a good constitutional amendment form and they understand that we had to go this route because the system is broken in other ways, they usually respond favorably and they want to see things like this move forward.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining the show this morning. Lots of interest. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
And we were joined by Steve Smith. He's executive director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, talking about this ballot amendment initiative, Floridians for Solar Choice. And still to come, we spotlight Scale Up North Florida, helping local entrepreneurs grow their business. But up next, don't miss it. It's a conversation with the historian from the iconic brand Stickley and how you can be part of a special event. That's next.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrats live on stage at the Florida Theater, February 16th at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Watch the Krat Brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
While reporting on the war in Iraq, David Morris was riding in a Humvee that was hit by an IED. It was one of the experiences in Iraq that led to his PTSD. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Morris about his new book, which tells the story of how PTSD has changed his life and examines the science and philosophy behind different therapies. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
Welcome back. Well, he's the entertaining and knowledgeable historian who knows more than just about anybody else about an iconic American brand, Stickley Furniture. Mike Daniel is a regular resource on the PBS hit Antiques Roadshow, which of course airs here on WJCT television. And Daniel travels the country evaluating pieces built during Stickley's famed 110-year history. If you're a Stickley fan, you're in luck because Daniel is coming to town this weekend. I spoke with him about the Stickley mystique. Mike Daniel, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
There's a lot of excitement around your appearance here in town to talk about Stickley Furniture. Of course, you are a regular advisor to our own PBS hit Antiques Roadshow. You can talk on and on about the Stickley legend and lore. Why do you think there's so much love for this brand and this craftsmanship?
Most of the love comes from the fact that there's just a universal acceptance these days for this American style of furniture, which had a lot of interest in the Jacksonville area. I mean, you've got the Riverside area there. You've got historic Springfield neighborhood, H.D. Smith House, so many bungalows in that area down there. I'm thrilled to finally get down to Jacksonville to make this presentation at the store.
Absolutely, yeah. The arts and crafts style, very popular here in our historic neighborhoods. And in fact, when you come to town for your appearance, not only will you talk about the history of Stickley, people can bring in their Stickley items to be evaluated. Is that right?
Yes, I'm always happy to take a look at objects that people believe to be Stickley objects. And that's where it gets a little difficult because there were five Stickley brothers. There were four different Stickley furniture companies. And the valuation and identification of the objects between those different companies can get quite confusing. So when someone says, oh, I have a piece of Stickley, that opens up a whole range of other questions that need to be asked. So I do this for the folks who will come to the show at the Jacksonville Furniture Mart. And I think people generally walk away with a pretty good idea of what they have.
That's good to know. And I think you're going to be talking, too, about how furniture is made today, the craftsmanship used today, as opposed to the skills these artisans used years ago. What are some of the changes that you've observed?
The changes are amazing. But then again, they're the same. When we look at the old pieces and we research them, we get them into our museum, and we decide to go ahead and make a new piece, our goal is to either maintain the dignity of the original construction or to improve it. And we spend a lot of time talking with people about how we are making the pieces better today than they were made originally. We're the same company. I mean, we want to carry on that tradition. We don't want to destroy it. And my 40 years at Stickley is on top of my great uncle's 30 years before me. So many of us here at the factory are looking at keeping the tradition alive and not just simply making a copycat looking piece of arts and crafts furniture.
And so many care about that, don't they? That keeping these traditions going in an IKEA world, keeping some of these old tried and true methods and just things of beauty, holding the, making sure those still hold a high place in our culture.
Yes, and there's a place for the IKEAs of the world. There's a place for practically everything in the furniture industry that's being sold. And what happens with our clients is they begin to discover that when they put a good piece of stickly furniture into their home, they begin to think a little differently, because what happens is they see the difference in their own home. And then they become collectors. And then the goal is to transition into a room interior or a home environment that allows them to smile because of the beautiful things that they've put in their home, rather than just the commonplace or throwaway things. And I'm always trying to explain that, yeah, we're cutting down a beautiful oak tree, but what we do with that wood and how we build that piece of furniture is going to make that wood serviceable for over 200 years. So yeah. The carbon footprint for cutting down a tree is negated when you use that wood to build an object that has so much life in it.
Speaking of which, at your appearance, there's going to be a drawing to win a piece of Stickley furniture. What's the excitement factor like when you do these appearances and people hope that they're the lucky winner?
Everybody just stands up and gets excited for themselves, and then when I pull somebody else's name, then they get a little discouraged. But if they have a piece of Stickley, that's wonderful. I mean, the best one was just in Iowa a little while ago, a few months ago. A 90-year-old couple had won the piece, and they both stood up, hugged each other, and kissed each other and said, now we have something to give to, and it was the granddaughter, to her granddaughter for her wedding. And everybody was just clapping for them, and it was just the coolest thing in the world.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, much excitement as you prepare to visit Jacksonville. Mike Daniel, a pleasure. Thanks for sharing the story of Stickley with our listeners.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to meeting many new friends down there and enjoying the hospitality of the Gravinsky family and the Jacksonville Furniture Mart. Thanks.
So come on out and meet Mike Daniel of Stickley Furniture. It's this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Jacksonville Furniture Mart on Atlantic Boulevard. That's at Atlantic and Southside. All attendees will receive a special showroom discount, free antique evaluations, and you'll have a chance to win a piece of Stickley Furniture or another prize. Pretty exciting. And when we come back, it's a big opportunity for local small businesses. We'll tell you about the efforts of Scale Up North Florida, now up and running in Jacksonville. That's next.
Join WJCT Tuesday, January 27th for an open and honest discussion hosted by State of the Reunion's Al Letson that brings issues of race and justice to the forefront with hopes of understanding and change. Go to Race in the River City under WJCT.org/events.
Tonight at 9, the Electro Lounge will not air so that we can bring you the President's State of the Union address from NPR News. The Electro Lounge returns Wednesday night at 9 p.m.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Mike Daniel, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being with
us. Crime has been growing in New Orleans' most popular neighborhood. Business owners are angry.
We should hold the administration accountable for the failures of not protecting the French Quarter.
And they worry about tourists.
We don't want them to get held up or mugged or stabbed or shot.
Fighting Crime in the French Quarter today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, this is a great opportunity for small business owners on the First Coast to make a big leap forward in 2015. Scale Up North Florida, a new program from the U.S. Small Business Administration, is up and running in Jacksonville, and they are accepting applications right now from local entrepreneurs. They'll pick a select group and give them all kinds of support to help them grow their business. Jennifer Margo, Program Director with Scale Up North Florida, is here to tell us all about it. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning.
Good to see you. So this is exciting. Scale Up North Florida on the UNF campus, and Jacksonville is one of only 8 cities in the country that got awarded this program. How did this come to town?
It's so exciting to be one of only 8 communities in the country to be a scale-up community. And this is a brand new program from the U.S. SBA. We are based at UNF, and we run alongside the Small Business Development Center, which a lot of people I know are also familiar with. And the office for the program is actually at the Beaver Street Enterprise Center. So we have a good presence in 2 different parts of town. But the SBA, basically, they were looking at the kinds of programs they support and how to grow small business in the country. And they saw that there's a lot of good support for pre-venture and startup businesses.
In Jacksonville.
In the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of good support for stage 2 businesses when you've already kind of made the leap and you're growing and you're in the millions of dollars of sales. But they found a gap in supporting stage 1 businesses, which are these businesses that have been in business for 2 or 3 years with an income of $150,000 to about $500,000 a year. And that's the kind of company that you've made it past the point where some companies would have already failed or closed their doors.
But you're having trouble making the next jump forward.
Mm-hmm. You're still in business, you're making money, and now you're really poised to do that big growth jump, and maybe you need a little bit of help to get there. And so the SBA really wanted to fill that gap. So they put out the request across the country for communities to say, give us the case why your community would be a scale-up community and why we should help specifically your community. What can you do if we fund this there? And Jacksonville was, it's really exciting that we got one of those programs, and here we are.
Yeah, they saw the opportunity here in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is anyone listening to us right now that's a small business owner that wants to grow needs to get in touch with you, because you are accepting applications right now to help growth-oriented, high-potential entrepreneurs increase their sales, get better access to capital, hire more people. This is an exciting opportunity, and this is free.
There is no...
You're going to pick some winners, and this is free assistance, right?
Exactly right. So we have up to 50 spaces for the program. We'll have 2 cohorts. One will start out at UNF, and one will start out at Beaver Street. And I'll tell you how the program unfolds during the year. But basically, after the first part of the program is over, it is individual for each business owner for the rest of the year. So we, depending on what your growth goals are, so because there are only 50 spots available, and because there's no investment, no financial investment on the part of the business owner, we do have to make sure that you are in the mindset of growth. So you've got a business that meets these financial criteria. You've been in business for 2 to 3 years already. You're in Baker, Duval, Nassau, Clay, or St. John's counties, and you want your business to grow. So you need to come into the application, which is online at scaleupnorthflorida.com, with an idea of what growth means to you. So increasing your sales or your bottom line is an example of growth, but that's not the only way that we can show growth. So maybe you want to, in 2015, you want to hire a couple of new employees, or you want to have access to capital to help you in between receivables, or so that you can buy real estate or expand your space. You want to add a new product to your line or start exporting. you want to expand your geographic reach. So growth means a lot of different things. So know what that means to you and what your goal really is when you fill out the application, because that's what we're going to look for, is someone who really knows what they want. And our job is going to be to put a roadmap together for them for how to get there in 2015.
And Jennifer, I know this about you. You've owned your own businesses in the past before taking this position running Scale Up North Florida. You have a unique perspective on what it's like to own a business and be looking around for help in putting together that roadmap to grow it.
Exactly. I had two businesses. I had a service-based business that was a public relations practice, and then I had a baby product business, which is product-based, and it was international, so I did importing and exporting and manufacturing and wholesale and retail and everything else that comes with running a small business, the marketing and the accounting, and I emptied the trash and I vacuumed.
Right.
So I do believe that I know the mindset of these small business owners and what they need, and if it were me, what I would want to get out of a program like this. So I think I'm in a unique position to be able to run the program and to interact with them and really make tweaks where we need to, because this is a brand new program. It's just launching across the country, and we are taking applications until this Friday.
That's right. Now, the window is short. If people are listening right now and they're just now hearing about this, they need to act now because the deadline is Friday.
Yep. It's an easy application. It's online. And if you fit into this category, if this describes your business, you know this. So you can go online and you can fill out the application in just a few minutes. We'll be selecting the up to 50 small businesses next week, and we'll let everyone know. And then the first week of February, we'll have an orientation. And the second week of February, the program begins.
And what'll basically happen is these business owners are going to go to school, aren't they? They will actually have classes.
They'll have classes in the very beginning. So the program begins with 6 4-hour sessions of entrepreneurial training that are held over 12 weeks. And you'll get to choose between a morning session or an evening, whatever works better for your schedule, because we know these are business owners and they have businesses to run. So we've provided two different timings. And what's exciting about this program is that the training has been customized for this size of business and the owner of this size of business for the things that they need to know and do to be able to grow and move to the next step. Because moving from stage one to stage two is really a leap. So, and the trainings are going to be done by local people who own small businesses, who are out there making it happen. And
people who have done this.
Oh, yes, and who can relate, and whose names you probably know. And so it's not just we bought a
book.
Can
you give us any names?
Sure. We have a couple of classes that are going to be run by Jennifer Holland from Holland People Plus Brands. She got a really great creative and advertising agency, and she's going to be doing branding strategy and marketing. We have Susie Lemon, who's the CEO of Dynamic Corporate Solutions and Idea Staffing, and Susie is going to be presenting human resources management. Then the leadership and strategic planning components will be presented by Ben Bowman, who's with Velocity Advisory Group in Ocala, and they do a lot of corporate training, and that's their specialty, and they write their own material. And then we have financial management, which will be taught by Paul Arrington, who's a consultant at the Small Business Development Center, and that's his specialty.
So some heavy hitters coming in. Excellent.
Yes, for sure.
As if you're just joining us, it's Scale Up North Florida, a free opportunity for local small business owners to grow their business in 2015. But again, the time window is short. If you haven't applied, you only have till Friday. 50 lucky winners will be selected. It's scaleupnorthflorida.com. I'm sure there's already been a lot of interest. Let me know how it goes, Jennifer.
Thank you. Will do.
She's Jennifer Marco, Program Director with Scale Up North Florida. Again, that deadline is Friday. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers this morning. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got comments or feedback about the show, just drop us an email, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcasts. They are now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, this week marks 5 years since the Supreme Court ruled on Citizens United, unleashing record amounts of money into the election campaign process. Diane will look at the effects of the decision on American politics and law and ongoing efforts to repeal the ruling. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Community support, or rather, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.